Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. So I don't think we're going to want to lose all of this beginning. So why don't we just go ahead and say welcome.
Welcome, everyone, to our rambling, horrible start of a podcast where we just start chatting to each other and ignore the fact that we're supposed to be putting together a show.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. I want to do this all the time with you guys. You're fun.
Even when not drinking.
Well, some
that's,
of us.
That's just you guys.
Kendall, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I would love to.
Welcome to the Paleo View.
Thank you. So I'm a mom of four girls, and I blog at primal-balance.com. And I talk a lot about my little urban farm that I live on with 17 chickens and aquaponics and growing wherever we can find an inch of sunlight and all over our neighborhood and community gardens. And I also work in local food policy as the project coordinator for childhood nutrition. And I partner with our school district and some other agencies who are all trying to make a really big difference in getting quality nutrition into kids' mouths. And we're doing that through school garden programs and just trying to teach kids how to grow food, where to grow it, why to grow it. And hopefully, eventually, we'll get more and more programs and have some shift in our cafeteria food. That's kind of our long-term goal. So that's essentially what I do. I'm also a nutritional therapy practitioner. And yeah, I think that's about the gist of it. I always joke that I have like three jobs because I'm a voice actor, former radio DJ, I work in food policy, and we all know as paleo bloggers, that's a full-time job too. So
I always thought that I did a lot, and then I met you and Michelle.
I know, she makes us sound lazy, doesn't she? Yeah.
That is not true. I know both of you, and there is no way in the world that we're all working it out. We're all hardworking mamas. That's all there is to it.
Well, what podcast did I recently hear you on? Was it Paleo Radio Magazine?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
It was a really good interview, by
the
way.
Thank you. Well, tell Tony. Tony did the interview. So.
I know. I did one with him, too, and I liked his...
Isn't he so great? So I got to team up with him at AHS, and we decided to sort of seg our podcast together and do part one, part two of an AHS wrap-up show. Of course, we interviewed Sarah. And so we did the first part on my podcast, Born Primal, and then we did the second part, which has not come out yet, on his. And it was so much fun to sit in a room with him for 2 days and interview people because he just did all the talking. And he is so smart and great, and I just loved it. I was like, and he's like, do you have anything to add, Kendall? And I was like, nope, you got it. You're good.
I'm sure you asked me at least one question during that interview.
Maybe one. Tony's a rock star, though. I just love him.
He is. He's got that, perfect host thing happening.
He needs to be on a red carpet with a microphone. That's what I'm thinking.
We should have a paleo red carpet.
That's what I was just going to say.
I was at the paleo red carpet last
week. You were.
Weekend.
Don't rub it in. Yeah, I know. I want to hear all about it. I've seen the pictures.
I saw pictures on Facebook and Instagram. I want more.
It looks so amazing.
It's honestly the most, and no one is going to be surprised by this, elegant, well put together wedding I've ever been to.
Aww.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about
Hello,
Palette
getting married.
Haley Mason and Bill Staley.
Now Haley Staley.
Well, she's still going by Haley Mason. That's her professional name. But yes, yeah. Now Haley Staley.
Is she going to double barrel?
She's not sure.
Oh my God.
I've never heard that before.
You've never heard that before?
I really don't think I've ever heard that before.
All right. We'll chalk that one up to Canadianism, okay, then?
Wow.
A double barrel name?
I'm a southerner. That must not be a southern thing. Somebody's going to ride and go, I'm a southerner, and it's totally a southern thing.
Yeah. No, in the South, I think that would have completely different
exactly.
meaning.
Hello. See? Hello. Yeah.
In Utah, perhaps. Stacey,
have you heard the term?
No.
Oh, okay, never mind. So, for anybody who didn't understand
what... hyphenating. Yeah, so I don't want to get into the details that I don't know are what she's sharing with friends and what she's, wanting everywhere on the internet. All I know is her professional name will remain the same because I assume it's on 3 published books and it makes sense for it to remain the same. So, but... anyway, it was a hashtag Paleo Royal Wedding, which, by the way, Bill and Haley did not come up with and were kind of embarrassed by. They kind of put it upon friends to come up with a uniform hashtag so that people, if we were sharing photos, people could enjoy it all together like you would with like AHS 13 or something like that.
Right.
And we all kind of on our own thread threw around some silly hashtag names, and Paleo Royal Wedding stuck because it really honestly personified the type of elegance that they had at the wedding, but at the same time was kind of silly and fun all at the same time. So the wedding was lovely. We unfortunately did not get there early to enjoy like pre and post festivities with Bill and Haley because we adore them and are friends with them and would have loved to have spent more than just 2 days there. Like some of the people who were traveling got to enjoy time with them before that was like haywire wedding time. So the first time we saw them was at what they called welcome dinner after their rehearsal. And when Matt and I pulled up into like the circle area in front of where their evening was scheduled, there was a Jenny's delivery van in front of our car in like the valet circle. And I looked at Matt and I was like, this is going to be a good party. That's a Jenny's truck right there. So I took a photo even before I like went into the party and Instagrammed it. And, of course, we went in and it was beautiful. Both events were held on 2 different golf courses, but they were like overseeing some really old and unique architecture in Pittsburgh, and the greens were gorgeous with trees and all kinds of stuff. And it was really awesome. The food was wonderful. It was exclusively gluten-free, and they tried to use as much high quality foods and cooking fats and all of that kind of stuff as possible for the welcome dinner. They actually smoked a whole pig and served that, which was awesome. And they used U.S. Wellness Meats barbecue sauce. And I'd been so clean eating and training with getting ready for Strongman that I hadn't had like pretty much anything in a month, and I hadn't drank and I hadn't, had treats and all that kind of stuff. And so I decided before I even did that the wedding would be my like, okay, I'm going to do it for the wedding. And then I'm going to get back on to training and eating right and try to see if I had the willpower to do that. And, so I had Jenny's and I had barbecue sauce, which I normally wouldn't have because Sarah knows that's autoimmune and there's tomatoes in there and I might die and who knows. But I survived, and it was so good. It was really, really
That's
good.
That's awesome.
And it was, already on the meat. So there's if it had been, on the side, I wouldn't have dipped in it. But I didn't, I wanted to eat the meat. So I ate the meat, and I didn't feel guilty about it. And I had Jenny's. I think I said that already. I definitely drank and really just enjoyed the company of friends. And I'm so proud and happy for Bill and Haley. It was amazing. Oh. I think what's the really cool thing about them is, I don't know if it's because they're younger or just because their parents are awesome or what the deal is, but I've been around their family quite a few times, and every single time their family is so supportive and encouraging of what they're doing. They want to learn and they want to help them, and they really it's a powerful testament to me that, when I'm around my family, they really respect and love me for what I'm doing, but they don't really get it. And I mean, my mom does, but that's really it. And so to see this event where they were all they knew it was a paleo thing. They knew that was important for them. They had a grain-free cookie table because it's Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh cookie table is a thing. And their family and friends went out of their way to make gluten-free and grain-free cookies for this gluten-free cookie table.
Wow.
And, I think if a lot of us asked that of our friends and family, we wouldn't get the same encouragement and support and respect for what that really meant and mattered to us. Right. So it was really powerful. And I kept crying all weekend because it wasn't just about Bill and Haley. I really saw their family forming. I know that they want to have a family, and I saw a lot of Matt and I's younger self in them. And I'm so happy for them that they found this before they had any children at all. And they've rediscovered their health, and their family's so supportive. And it just was this is what it's about. This is where the whole community should be. This is where we want to get, and to see that, that was the best part for me, let alone it was a gorgeous wedding and Haley would look like a princess. And yes, but, I really, really, as a mother, I also saw this, I don't know, Kendall, Sarah's probably not at this point with the age of her kids yet, but I was juxtaposed between this position of, in one hand, my peers and my friends are getting married and starting this thing that I've been doing for a decade, well, 12 yeah. years. But then on the other side of that, I was wow, in 12 years, this could potentially be me and my kids. And I really identified with Aww. The speeches that her parents were giving and was crying like a crazed lunatic and was just losing it. So,
I'm in that place now. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I think now more than ever, I think about that decade down the road a lot when things come up, and I'm like, oh, we're going to be going through that one day, and that's going to happen. And
I'm assuming that's at least 2 or 3 decades away from my kids.
Yeah, it's crazy, though. I know. I would be very emotional, too.
It was weird for me. It probably didn't help that I was boozing it up.
Blame the emotions on the booze.
Exactly. The poor people who were sharing a table with me were probably oh my God. This girl can't stop crying.
I think good for you for taking a break, though, and letting yourself just enjoy. That's my big thing is balance. I think so many people in this community are so all or nothing, and I used to be too. And I really try to talk to people about finding that gray. And I think that, giving yourself that space to just let go and enjoy this beautiful time and, have some drinks, have some food that you normally wouldn't eat or, it didn't go along with what you were trying to do. I think that's fantastic. Okay, I really do.
You know what my 3-year-old told me today? Just because I just think it's fantastic here. If you make gray sparkly, it's silver.
I love that. If you make gray sparkly, it's silver.
Right?
That's beautiful.
Think about finding the gray, but think about finding the silver.
The sparkly gray.
Yeah.
Your 3-year-old's amazing.
She's pretty darn cool.
I'm gonna hang out with her and I wanna make sparkly gray. We're gonna paint our nails together.
Oh my gosh, you would be her best friend. yeah, right there. Best friend.
You guys totally lost me back at sparkles.
Sorry.
Can we talk superheroes, maybe? No?
I'm four girls. I know you guys. Sarah's two girls, right?
Yeah, you're six girls to my three boys.
I know. Yeah, but just think of all the like paleo girlfriend boyfriend stuff we'll have one day. It's perfect,
no,
right?
It's never
lots of drama.
Yes, drama, drama, drama.
So, is that enough of the paleo royal wedding?
Yeah.
It sounds great. Sounds amazing.
Do you want to talk about P3?
Oh. Yeah, when this comes out, I'll probably be there. Yeah, so as a reminder to everyone, I'm going to P3, otherwise known as Baconpalooza. It's a multi-day event in, I think, Swoop, Virginia, / Staunton, mm-hmm. Virginia, depending on where you're from. It's a tour of Polyface, which is Joel Salatin's farm. He was the author of the foreword of our book and featured in awesome movies like Food, Inc. and Farmageddon, I think. And then that evening, Saturday evening, a bunch of top paleo bloggers and chefs are going to be competing in a bacon cook-off. And I am showing up with food. Now, I'm pretty sure that I'm not cooking said food because that would be a total failure. So Matt's going to cook the food and I'm going to bring it and hope to not mess it up. And Amy's going to help me serve it. So Amy and I will be there. We'll have books. And that event's only $25, although I think it might be sold out. So, but then the other events, there's still tickets and there's a movie screening. And so anyway, Amy and I will be there, probably hot, sweaty, disgusting, and messing things up. But the bacon jam should taste good. So
that is the best pitch I've ever heard.
And then speaking of bacon, we also launched a huge giveaway today in celebration of hitting 40,000 Facebook fans. And
yay!
Thanks. And finishing the launch of Beyond Bacon. I think we're finally on the other side of that. So we kind of wanted to have a celebratory giveaway. And we are giving away half a hog. So Cook's Pig Ranch in California, which supplies meat to awesome people like Pete's Paleo and George from Civilized Caveman Creation, have teamed up with us and our publisher to provide people a custom butchered, however you want your hog butchered, and you can use the pages and Beyond Bacon to help you figure that out, or work with the farmer, obviously, if you have questions, but win a half hog, a signed copy of Beyond Bacon, and then we have second and third place prizes for international entrants, which we don't usually have for a copy of Beyond Bacon as well. And all you have to do is cook a recipe out of the book and then hashtag it on social media. And you don't have to purchase anything to participate. If you don't have the book, we've got tons of recipes on our website tagged under the Beyond Bacon tag, so you can make any of those that are out of the book and be eligible to win as well. And that doesn't close until September 17th. So the more entries you put in, the more chances you have of winning.
I should totally take pictures of the pork rinds I just made Beyond Bacon.
You should reshare that photo because it's only today is September 3rd. It started today and then it closes at midnight on the 16th.
Well, I just missed it by a day.
You did. Actually,
I was a day early.
I know a couple people on the Instagram feed, one of them made sausages and she did she showed the whole process the exact way that Beyond Bacon tells you to and they came out perfectly. And I was like, you need to repost these. sorry to make you reshare, but these are totally good entry criteria. So, yeah. So that's exciting, right? Half a hog. Who doesn't want that?
That is amazing. Yeah. Oh, my God. Who doesn't want that?
And Cook Pigs Ranch were telling us they finish their hogs not on grains, okay? A lot of people finish a lot of the meat that you buy that's grass-fed or pastured ends up being finished on grains, you know, grain finished. And pigs is the same way. Even Joel does this. Like, you know, when you bring them in to go to slaughter, oftentimes there's a transit time and so they're not on pasture and they're eating more grains or whatever. Their pigs are finished on macadamia nuts, acorns, and avocados.
Wow. Nice.
I can't even imagine how good that tastes. Like, I want to win this prize package myself. So, Cook Pigs Ranch is actually going to start doing nationwide shipping in a couple of months, I think. So if you're interested in checking out their meat, check back in a couple of months. But in the meantime, you should try to win half a hog delivered to you just the way you'd like. All you have to do is make delicious food and hashtag it. So that's, I'm sorry I was a radio announcer and pitching myself right there.
I actually really like that as a former radio announcer. I thought you did a fantastic job and I would hire you, Stacey.
Thanks. Good thing I don't need a job, though.
Not one more, right?
I got plenty.
Just good to know that you got what it takes, right?
Perfect. So I guess the last thing that I haven't mentioned is that I've been kind of hardcore strongman training tonight. I mentioned it earlier.
Just tonight.
Instead of drinking, I went tonight. I pulled like this 200 plus pound giant chain. Like it was shorter than my leg. And when I went out to like pull it, they're like, all right, pull that 90 feet. And I'm like, well, that's not so bad. That's a little chain. And then I picked it up. I'm like, oh, God. Okay. I got it. And I totally pulled the chain. So I'm kicking booty on the strongman front. I'm going to try to have an update go live this week, but feeling really good about it. So that's exciting. I like
you are such a rock star. Like I'm so wimpy about working out that it's not even funny. And you're just like pulling chains and wow.
Well, yesterday they had us do Hotshot 19. Did you do that one, Kendall? Is that what you've got hurt on?
No, not even close. I'm not even tell you. It's so sad and wimpy what I got hurt on. I'm embarrassed and I'm not going to tell you.
Just, man, just pretend it was some beast mode.
It was, oh my God. Like, I jumped off a building.
There you go.
It was hardcore. And then I ran like 7,000 meters. Then I rode 20. No, I'm just kidding.
You rode a 5K.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So yesterday we did Hot Shots 19 and they had us warm up outside in the gravel. I kid you not, even though I do strongman, I complain all the time. Like,
I'm a total complainer.
They were like, do an inchworm into a push-up, and we were outside in the gravel, and I was like, no, I'm sorry. I don't like rocks and glass in my hand, no thanks. And they're like, Stacey, get down and do it. I'm like, I don't wanna. So as much as I like to be strong and sweat, I also still really like to be a girl about things. Like, I don't like to get injured. They tell me all the time, they're like, you're just going to have to... They say man up, and they don't mean it in, like, a derogatory way. They're like, you just got to man up and beast mode, power through. And, you know, you end up with bruises and all kinds of stuff at the end. And then you're proud of it, but right beforehand, you're like, oh, I'm a girl.
I pulled the go get a manicure right before CrossFit this morning. And I walk in, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm that girl. Really? Like, I went and got my nails done before I went to the gym? What? So it was really just a timing thing. It was just the only option this week, but... Really? Yeah, well, I'm such a girl.
I get shellac, and I get my nails cut really short on purpose so that I can have girly nails that don't get chipped by working
like you
out.
Like you do the gel? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I did. I did the gel.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah. So, like, I did that before because, yeah, I wouldn't go in there with, like, wet nails. But I do the same thing. I get them, like, semi-short, but still, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe I got my nails done before I went to CrossFit. I'm going to like put lots of makeup on next time and do my hair too, I think, just to go work out.
All right. What are we supposed to be talking about?
We were going to do a show on like food quality and priorities when it comes to food quality. I thought Kendall might have some like fun things to say on those things since so much of what she does has, you know, is linked in with food quality.
I can't wait to listen to her talk because when I listened to her on Tony's show, I was like, oh, the interview's over? Come on. No, come on.
Aww.
I really was. I wanted more of you. So.
Well, thank you. What would you like me to talk about, Sarah?
I don't know. Maybe should we do science with Sarah and then jump into some questions and then we can actually like answer some questions.
That would be good. Yes.
Should we do it, Stacey?
I'm ready.
Sweet. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science.
Okay. So today, because we are doing a food quality show, the Science with Sarah segment is completely inspired by a question that we had that was a little bit tangential to some of the topics that we're going to be discussing today, but allows me to talk about something that I get a lot of questions about, and that is about potatoes. So the question that I actually got was from Lori from Gig Harbor, Washington, and she wrote, "Potatoes is one of the hard parts. Hubby likes them, and prior to giving up nightshades, we did have potatoes sometimes. Are potatoes that aren't white or Yukon, purple, etc. okay? Everything I've read says either eat white potatoes or just potatoes, and my CSA does a lot of variety in veggies, and often has different yellow or purple potatoes. Thanks. Love your podcast." So the part of this question is, you know, we've in the paleo community have had a debate on whether or not potatoes should be included in a standard paleo diet. And so part of this question is getting at, you know, whether or not potatoes are okay and who they're okay for. If you're giving up nightshades, potatoes are a nightshade. So if there's a reason why you need to avoid nightshades, you definitely need to avoid potatoes. But other than that, does it matter what variety of potatoes you have? So I just want to sort of summarize the debate, because I think that there's actually a lot of good resources on various people's blogs. You know, as that debate was going, that debate's sort of old. It was sort of 2012 when people really started looking at the nutritional value of potatoes and the, you know, potential anti-nutrients. Because that really, when we evaluate foods on a paleo diet, what we're looking at is nutrients versus anti-nutrients, and potential sort of gut irritation or foods that potentially stimulate inflammation. So potatoes really actually do have some nutrition that's definitely, you know, makes them a worthwhile vegetable. They have vitamin B6, vitamin C, magnesium, potassium, copper, and they have antioxidants, especially carotenoids and anthocyanins. The reason why there is this concern around potatoes is that they are very, very high starch. And so for anybody who's trying to lose weight, that can, you know, potentially undermine their efforts. It really depends on how much they're eating and what the rest of their diet is based on. So that was one of the initial arguments against potatoes, is that they do have a fairly high glycemic load for a vegetable. The other concern has always been the glycoalkaloid content. So glycoalkaloids, I've talked about them before, are a chemical that are found in all of the plants of the nightshade family, and also there's similar compounds in legumes that act as a detergent. So what they actually do is they allow water and oil to mix, which allows them to insert into the membranes of cells and restructure the membrane to form pores. Now, there's a whole different variety of these types of chemicals. Glycoalkaloids seem to be very, very good at disrupting the cell membrane and potentially damaging cells, depending on what glycoalkaloid you're talking about. And they seem to be pretty good at getting across the gut barrier and stimulating the immune system. Again, depending on exactly, this is a whole class of chemicals, depending on exactly which glycoalkaloid you're talking about, and depending on whether or not the gut is healthy. So in a healthy person with a healthy gut, the effect from glycoalkaloids really seems to be extremely minimal. And that has basically allowed the paleo community as a whole to embrace potatoes as a paleo-friendly food. Where that becomes a problem is in anybody dealing with health issues, very leaky guts, autoimmune disease, any kind of chronic illness that is tied to gut health. That's where the glycoalkaloid content of potatoes can be a problem, because potatoes actually have some of the higher concentrations of glycoalkaloids of any members of the nightshade family. Like, sort of potatoes and tomatoes are the two worst. What's really important to know about potatoes is the glycoalkaloids are in most varieties are concentrated in the peel. The only variety that I think has been measured. I mean, there's thousands actually varieties of potatoes, and they certainly haven't measured glycoalkaloids in all of them. But Snowden potatoes have a pretty high glycoalkaloid content in the flesh of the potato in addition to the peel. And it's my understanding that that is one of the varieties that's very commonly used for potato chips. So, but not commonly found in stores or commonly grown by sort of small local farms. You probably won't find that variety in CSA. So you'll see some people who will eat potatoes but won't eat potato chips, even if they're cooked in good oil, unless it's the potato chips, you know, specifically say something like russet potato chips, because you can find that. The glycoalkaloid content increases with improper storage. So basically, the best way to store potatoes is in the dark and in the cold. So under 45 degrees Fahrenheit, which basically means in your fridge, and in the dark, which also means in your fridge, unless you have like some weird fridge that has a light on all the time. Most people don't. And so when you look at potatoes, the glycoalkaloid content is really the dominant reason why it doesn't work for a lot of people. But if you're a healthy person, you know, potatoes have some vitamins. Getting to the question of, does it matter what kind of potato you have? Other than Snowden's, you know, any potato, the glycoalkaloid content is concentrated in the peel. So generally, I would recommend peeling potatoes. And in terms of, you know, white, yellow, Yukon Gold, purple, really, it doesn't matter. In terms of glycoalkaloids, in terms of nutrients, vitamins and minerals seem to be the same. Again, it's not like there's been one study that's looked at the vitamins and minerals in 2,000 different kinds of potatoes and can tell you exactly which ones are the best. But it seems to be pretty comparable, vitamins and minerals, from variety to variety of potatoes. Antioxidants will be higher in the more pigmented potatoes. So actually, a Yukon Gold potato would be better than a white potato in terms of antioxidants, and a purple potato would be even better than a yellow potato. So the brighter and darker, more vibrant the color, and this is a general rule of thumb for just about all vegetables and fruit, because what gives them pigment are antioxidants. So the same goes for potatoes. So when you get those really, really cool heirloom purple potatoes in your CSA box, unless you have a good reason to avoid nightshades, those are totally paleo food.
Yum. I thought it was really interesting at AHS that there were white potatoes on the lunch menu. Sarah, did you not think that was just totally crazy after 2 years ago at the first AHS when it was like, potatoes are the devil?
Well, this, a lot happened in 2012. You know, this was
seriously,
like, you know, I have heard it called the Great Potato Debate of 2012.
Yes.
And
going down
in
the history books.
That I think is so remarkable about the paleo community is that we have these debates and that we have the back and forth and we talk about the pros and cons and we look at the most current research and then we look at the older research and we evaluate the quality of the research and we have this discussion and we're okay with saying, hey, you know, our initial thoughts about potatoes, you know, not being good for anybody. Well, actually, it turns out that, you know, if for most people, they're probably fine. And right. I think that is such a cool thing because to me, that is what makes paleo not a diet, because that discussion, it makes it just the search for, you know, optimal nutrition. It makes it just this understanding of how food interacts with our bodies that guides our choices. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it, I think, something that is just going to continue to grow in momentum. That's what makes it not a fad, right? Because we'll admit when we're wrong. We'll you know, we'll go back and reevaluate. New science comes in. We'll you know, look at it and read it and assimilate it into our ideas. And if that means that we go, you know, hey, it, you know, this food that we thought was bad, it turns out it's not so bad. Or, hey, this food we thought was great, turns out maybe we shouldn't eat it. I mean, both of those things are possible. I think that's just, I mean, to me, that's awesome.
I think so too. And I think as the community has grown, we've really shifted this idea from it being quote unquote a paleo diet to more of like a paleo template. I know in my nutrition practice, that's what I use, and a lot more people are using that. And I think the nice thing is that it takes away the perfectionism aspect of that. So it's like, we don't have to have this perfect diet. It doesn't have to be exactly this, this, and this. And we've realized that there's so much, you know, bio-individuality that we're dealing with here that people are respecting that and seeing that we are just all so different. Like, what I eat is not going to work for you. What you eat is not going to work for Stacy. And I mean, I love that that's being recognized, you know, globally.
Yeah, it's cool.
Ago, well, at least I know, like 3-4 years ago, when I first started looking into paleo, it really was a low carb diet, and I don't think that someone getting into it today would think that way. You know, I think we've learned a lot about not just potatoes, but about carbs and safe starches from kind of the perfect health movement and all of that sort of science and interest. I think what Sarah, you were saying last year about the great potato debate is, I want to specifically call out that. Matt Lalonde, when he did his nutrient density scale at AHS last year, I think started the change when he kind of said in front of everyone that potatoes have more nutrients than sweet potatoes. And I think that kind of took everyone like, whoa, you know? And I have personally found, even though I have an autoimmune condition, that if I don't eat the skin of potatoes and I don't eat them frequently, I don't have a problem with them. I don't get joint pain. I don't get skin issues. I don't have issues with them. So I think, you know, I think it's definitely important that if you have an autoimmune condition, you go completely free for a certain amount of time. But Sarah and I have talked before about lumping all nightshades together in a group. Not all nightshades are created equal. Like cayenne pepper and tomatoes are on a different spectrum for me than skinless potatoes and cooked sweet bell peppers. You know, it's just they're not the same. So I think especially for people who work out a lot, you need a form of carbohydrate in order to fuel your body and feel energized. And I know that fat's important. We talk about fat being important. But I know personally that if I do not consume a moderate amount of carbohydrates, which would be considered low by standard terms, but I mean like at least 100 grams a day, I do not perform well in the gym.
Right.
So.
Right.
Cool. Well, I was really interested. I think the interesting part that you said, Sarah, that was new to me was thinking about the pigmentation, because I know that about other fruits and vegetables, and I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me in potatoes. And so I am totally looking forward to getting some purple potatoes the next time I go to the store.
Yeah, they're actually just coming potatoes now at my local farmer's market, and we're just starting to see some of the different varieties come. And I still have so much problems with nightshades that I'm not ready to try them. I'm sure I will in the future, but now is not the time for me to be experimenting with things like that. But I, you know, I have my family has sort of said, hey, could you think we could have potatoes? I'm like, of course you can have potatoes. Like, I can cook potatoes for you guys and have something else for me. So I'm waiting for the purple ones, because my youngest, purple's her favorite color. Mm. So whenever I can find like purple cauliflower or, you know, purple broccoli or any, you know, purple sweet potatoes, anything that's purple, she just goes crazy.
How
like
cool.
It's just the neatest thing for her. And she's having a hard time right now. We just this is a total tangent. We just tonight figured out the thing that we've been trying to figure out what's causing her to have these occasional mild allergic reactions. And we knew it was something that we weren't eating a lot of, but we couldn't figure out what it was. And tonight we figured out it was oranges.
Wow.
Which my mom and my brother are both super allergic to oranges. My brother has to carry an EpiPen because he goes in anaphylactic shock.
Wow.
From like trace amounts of oranges. So it really shouldn't be that big of a surprise, but she loves them. And so it's like another tasty food that I'm not letting her have. So it's, you know, she's having a hard, she's three. She doesn't really understand it, but she just started to scream. Like she broke out into hives and she just started screaming. Oh. And I basically, you know, raced for the Benadryl, and, you know, she wasn't, you know, like she wasn't swelling or having trouble breathing or anything like that. It was just hives. But I think she just, like, I know from when I've had reactions like that, that there's an anxiety that goes along with them. And I think she was tired, and she was suddenly itchy and sore. And then she just started to scream. It was a hard night. So if I can get her some purple potatoes, I think that would make her happy.
Poor thing.
Yeah, no, it's rough, and it's rough when you're that small and you don't really understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say on a positive note that the Paleo Royal Wedding had purple fingerling potatoes.
Yum.
They had like a variety of potatoes, and they also had beets and some colorful root veg that was enjoyed on either and or both nights, that were clearly both like local and seasonal. And yeah, now I'm all excited to get some purple potatoes.
It's amazing how many people don't even know about that. I hosted a little school health night at our Montessori this last year, and I did four varieties of sweet potatoes that are grown in North Carolina, and two of them were purple. And actually, one was like a purple Japanese, and it really more just had like a purple outer skin and then was more white on the inside, but it was a sweet potato. And people were just like blown away that a sweet potato could be purple. And I was like, yeah, it's awesome and delicious.
We got a white sweet potato that we used for chips and Beyond Bacon. So it's not just like only potatoes. Sweet potatoes
are
different varieties.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a lot here in North Carolina. Quite a few.
Cool. So we've burned up 3/4 of our show. Maybe we can get to it.
A question or two. Well, yeah.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
All right. So our first question is from Wisteria. And Wisteria writes, "Hey ladies, so here's my question. Have you ever noticed that industry meats affect you differently or your children, that they cause mood swings, healing crisis, sleep issues, anger, etc.? By industry meats, I'm speaking specifically of anything raised on conventional feed in a conventional environment, general restaurant meat, farmed fish. Also, have you noticed a difference or had the pleasure to consume soy-free meat or eggs? I'm curious if anyone else has experienced the direct link between the quality of meat or egg products and health and healing. My son and I both react to critters fed soy, poultry being the worst. This is through basic observation that I've noticed this. I am unsure if organic is as bad as conventional. But the other factor is that the organic industry does not require GMO testing. So is grain-fed organic meat really GMO-free or any safer? I've been sourcing soy-free meats and eggs for a while now. There's a farm in PA is Pennsylvania?
Yep.
Okay. That we source from exclusively soy-free. And we grow all our own poultry, as I've seen that to be the worst for our family. I suspect it's because poultry consumes 70% or more, depending on time of year and pasture quality, of its nutrition from grains. Before finding soy-free eggs, I never liked eggs. Before switching to a soy and corn-free layer ration, I never liked anything other than scrambled and not daily. Now I eat egg yolks or other eggs daily and prefer them soft fried. My husband has also noticed a difference. Sorry for the huge backstory, but I'm curious if anyone out there has noticed this." Let's let's stop there.
Kendall.
Well,
good luck.
You know,
where are you going to start?
Well, my chickens are also on a non-GMO and soy-free layer feed, and they, you know, spend most of their day out in the yard free-ranging, and then they eat, you know, some amount of feed. And I'm like trying to think of this. So I share custody of my children. My three older girls are with my ex-husband. And so, you know, half the time I don't have any idea what they're eating because I have no control over what they eat when they leave my house. And so, you know, my kids are gluten-free at my house at best, and that's it, except for my youngest, who is between my husband and I, and, you know, she eats the diet that we want her to eat. But so I can't tell you specifically. I don't know. I'm dealing with kids who come home pretty glutened up and, you know, sort of all that stuff. So there is no way in the world that I could ever be like, yeah, it's conventional meat, if that's what they're even eating. I am thinking of, like, you know, the fact that we never eat conventional meat at home, but sure, we go out to restaurants at times and have conventional meat, and I can't see the difference. Like, I personally can't think, oh, their behavior is this way or that way, or that they're having any issues that are specifically. But again, I feel like I'm not a good example of any of this because of the fact that my kids don't eat this way 100% of the time, you know, maybe 50% of the time. But I will say this. We had some IgG testing done years ago on all my girls, and two of them showed up to have egg sensitivities and have in the past complained when they've had eggs that their stomachs hurt. Well, once we got our chickens all laying and had them on this particular feed, I noticed that the stomach aches were gone and there was no complaints after eating eggs. And I remember at one point we could not get our feed. We have to drive quite a trek to get it. And so we ended up having to use some conventional feed for like a week or two or something. And I noticed that the girls were once again complaining about the stomach aches after eating the eggs. And again, once we went back on the soy-free non-GMO feed, we were back to no problems.
Interesting.
So that's the only sort of correlation that I can come up with in any of this. I just have no idea with behavior or any of that kind of stuff because of, you know, kind of our situation. And my youngest is 5 and I've never noticed anything with her, even though she, you know, pretty much eats whatever we eat. But yeah, the egg thing is definitely the only example I think that I've got in that. So I think it's interesting, but I don't know. That's like pretty deep and intense.
Well,
taking it to the next level.
There was a specific question in there for me about an experience that I had with a specific farm and certain eggs. And I'm not going to answer the specific question, but I'll just say that when I eat egg yolk, I always eat specifically wheat-free eggs. And the problem that I have is that oftentimes when you find soy-free eggs, they're not wheat-free. Like, it's usually one or the other. So for me, because I'm celiac, I do find that I have a pretty immediate reaction to eating any sort of conventional egg, even just the yolk. And so in our home, we use pastured eggs. And if we, like in the wintertime, it's more difficult to find pastured eggs. And if we can't find them, then I don't eat them because I'm that sensitive. But
do you mean as in like they're not on feed at all? They're just 100% pastured? Is that what you're saying?
Or they're on seeds. Like, I think the couple of farms that we know that I can get them from, the feed that they're using, because I don't really care about soy-free, but I do know that they're soy-free, wheat-free, GMO-free. They're, I think they told me once it was like hemp seed, flax seed. I don't remember the other stuff. But yeah, I think most chickens, it's very difficult, especially for a farmer, not just like a backyard farmer, but in your backyard, you can give them scraps and stuff. So it's, you use less feed, but you at least can give them more food. But when you're a big farmer, there's only so much bugs chickens will eat. Most, even Polyface uses a supplemental feed. I kind of think that we all agree that that's kind of the baseline for good farming practices. Yeah, so for me personally, as a celiac, I found that I am sensitive, specifically with eggs. Sarah and I have talked before about why an egg is a little bit different than meat in the way that it goes into your body. And Monica can find that specific podcast, hopefully, crossing my fingers, and put that in the show notes for this specific person. But on meat in general, other than just like feeling like it's heavier in me, I don't know if that's like an adequate explanation, but I think my body has a more difficult time digesting regular GMO, regular standard meat. But like Kendall, we only eat that when we're out. And so I wouldn't be able to gauge whether or not that really inhibits health. I do know that the first year and a half to 2 years we were paleo, we didn't eat exclusively grass-fed and pastured meat, and I was okay. Like, I did, you know, I didn't, I wasn't in digestive distress. I didn't have a whole lot of problems. So I think I enjoy the health benefits and the, you know, the flavor of pastured meat, with the exception of grass-fed steaks. I know I'm a terrible human being, but I haven't yet been sold on the flavor of that yet. But, I still eat them. I just kind of miss the taste of grain-fed steaks. It's terrible.
I think, you know, the thing with grass-fed, I think, is that there's so many different breeds and exactly, you know, what types of grasses they eat and how, you know, how much rain they've had. Like, you know, all of those things affect the flavor of the meat. And I think we're so used to, you know, one of the things that you get from CAFO-raised meat is you get, it's all the same breed. It's all fed the same food. So you get this consistency of flavor. So I think, you know, I've had really, really tremendously awesome grass-fed steaks, and I've had grass-fed steaks that just are like rubber and just don't, you know, taste that great either. So I think there's just more variety when it comes to grass-fed. So you just kind of have to like luck out with the right breed of cow on the right farm at the right time of year. And sort of, I mean, that's just the trick, is finding when that is.
I completely discounted grass-fed. Like 8 or 9 years ago, I was ordering it. I think it's before anybody even heard of it. You know, it's like back in my raw milk drinking days. And I was ordering it from a farm in Alabama. And it was actually, the person who owned the farm was one of the former members of the band Alabama. And so I was ordering it, and I was, you know, having that problem where like only thing that I really liked was like the roast and the ground beef. Everything else was like not tender at all. And I also had no idea how to prepare it. So there was, that was probably the issue, but I really like wrote it off for a long time. And I grew up on a farm where my grandparents did grain feed their cows. They were pastured, but they still had supplemental feed. And so I grew up with this whole idea that, you know, you have to feed them grains to be tender or whatever. But I've definitely since then found some of our local farmers who do really great, you know, like the steaks are great and everything. So I think you're right. It is just the variety and the breeds, and I don't know, but I wrote it off for a long time.
So my experience is that, I mean, we don't, again, we're kind of like Stacy, like the first year of our journey or a little over a year, we were eating, started eating actually purely conventional meat, and then slowly started introducing more grass-fed and pasture-raised as we started basically readjusting our budget and prioritizing food more than other things. And now we eat almost exclusively grass-fed, pasture-raised, or wild. And, you know, when we do eat something that's conventional, it's when we're out or if we're at somebody's house. And then again, it's kind of hard to pinpoint if we do have tummy aches or behavioral issues, if it was the quality of the meat or if it was an oil that was used in the preparation. I think some people are really, really sensitive to omega-6s. And I've heard that some people have the same kind of reaction to eating conventional meat that say, you know, I might have to eating a tomato or have, you know, being glutened or something like that. So I think that there are people who are just, their bodies are really, really sensitive to the really high omega-6 content that grain-fed and sort of grain-fed and factory-farmed meat has. It also doesn't have the fat-soluble vitamin content that we get from pasture-raised meat. So for me, like I would notice it if I was eating it a lot. Like I can't say that I felt bad when I was eating conventional meat, but I did notice that I was healing and feeling better and had more energy when we made the switch, especially when we switched to pasture-raised pork. I mean, that for some reason made a bigger difference than switching to grass-fed beef for us. And that might just be because of the really high vitamin D content in pork fat. I'm not sure, but that was sort of that I really noticed when we changed pork suppliers. So, you know, I think that it's one of those things that it's, you know, some people react more than others. I don't, like if I'm going out to a restaurant, I don't tend to worry about that. But for me, that the big ones are, you know, gluten and nightshades. And if I can stay gluten-free and nightshade-free, then that's actually a pretty tall order. It's actually really hard to do. So I'm pretty happy if I can keep those two things out of my diet.
Agreed?
Should we move on?
I hope we answered their question. I'm not sure we did, but.
I'm sure there was an answer buried in there somewhere. I think the answer was, yeah, maybe.
We don't know. We think so, maybe.
So she specifically says mood swings, healing crisis, sleep issues, anger, etc. I would think that that sounds more like cross-contamination of gluten for me. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced that from just meat itself. Now, she might want to check out, I'll note as a last thing for her to check out, I know Karen Prendergast from Paleo Approved has severe allergies to, I believe it's corn, and any animal that's been fed corn gives her that kind of a reaction. So she might, maybe she wants to check that out, but for me, even having celiac, I don't have that kind of result from just eating grain meat. Like sometimes if we haven't ordered a quarter cow, because that's the only way that we get steak. And, when my lady friend comes, I always crave steak. It's just, sorry, I don't know. It's iron. Anyway. so sometimes we'll like run out to the store, or Matt will run out to the store and get like a conventional steak. I'm not saying I do this all the time. Okay. Why do I feel guilty about this? Anyway.
I know. I'm like, don't defend it, girl. Own it.
Yeah.
Own
I'm
it.
Like, if that's what I'm eating is a steak, I should not feel bad about this.
Not anyway. At all. Oh my gosh. Not at all.
Maybe like 3 times a year. You know, I know that we're eating grain fed meat, but it is not contaminated in any way because we're cooking it in our own home and we're using good cooking fats and, you know, our house is obviously gluten-free. I don't have any reaction at all to that. So I don't know if she maybe has cross-contamination or a severe allergy, but that would be my specific answer to her specific question, I believe.
Yeah. And I was going to say earlier when you were talking about the eggs with the soy, I think the soy is actually, when you were saying the wheat is more of an issue for you, wheat is not probably as much of an issue as soy is for us. And I know that like at least one or two of my daughters definitely have some soy issues. And that could have been the factor in the eggs for us is eating soy, soy fed eggs versus the soy free. And so, and I also have corn allergies as well. So,
There's research that shows that, eggs incorporate intact soy proteins from chickens' diet. So I know that I actually successfully reintroduced eggs back into my diet a few weeks or a month or so ago. And it was finding soy-free, non-GMO, completely pasteurized eggs from a local farmer that I seem to be able to handle them fine. I still don't – I'm so used to my like – Oregon meat breakfasts that I actually now I'm not tempted by scrambled eggs for breakfast. But it's kind of like a neat, I'm almost using them sort of reintroducing breakfast for dinner night. So I don't eat them every day, but I do notice like I eat them, I feel fine. I don't notice any skin issues. I don't have any gastrointestinal issues. I don't have any of the, you know, things that would normally happen in my body if I was eating something that I shouldn't be. So I'm still not at a eating them every day kind of point, but I seem fine with them. And I think it for me, I've recognized that I'm really highly sensitive to soy. So for me, getting soy free was big. And I don't actually know if they're wheat free. I know they're soy free, non-GMO and organic.
Usually if they're using like Countryside or Reedy Fork, which are two of the like sort of what a lot of people in the South use those, then it's definitely not wheat free, but it is organic. Countryside is organic.
Well, you know, for me, wheat is a far more natural food for a chicken to be eating than soy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it probably has a lot to do with how healthy the chickens are. Like basically if their, you know, guts are healthy guts, then you shouldn't be getting these intact proteins into the eggs.
Yeah. I think that was a huge, like I read some of that research as well. And I think that was a huge eye opener for me. We were already on the soy-free feed, but I was like, oh, aha, this makes a lot of sense now because of that.
No one has measured whether or not like proteins from wheat are found intact in eggs after chickens are fed wheat. We only know this about soy. So it's just one of those things that we go, well, if it happens with soy, potentially it could happen with other feed ingredients, but maybe one of the reasons why it happens with soy is because of the very high saponin content, which totally brings us back to what I talked about in Science with Sarah, because those cause a leaky gut. And there's tons of research showing problems with really, really heavily soy-based feeds in poultry and fish farms, that if you increase the soy content too high, it kills them. So I'm not sure why it's such a ubiquitous ingredient in feed, this idea that it's the only good protein to give them or something. I don't understand why it's in so many feeds if we know that if we give them too much, they die.
It's not something I would like to eat.
Yeah.
Just a little arsenic every day will be okay.
Exactly. It's just a small amount of cyanide.
Yeah. We really need to move on.
Let's do one more question. But just one, because it's a doozy, okay? So, and maybe I'll read the whole question and then we'll see if we can break it up. This question is from Caroline. Hey ladies, have you guys covered which offal is okay to get conventional and which really, really isn't? The price differential for these is huge, way more than the price difference for muscle meat, and like everyone else, I am on a budget. Like you two, I've got an autoimmune issue, Hashimoto's, and I'm trying to get more organ meat into my diet, so the higher prices are discouraging. Please don't tell me just to go to a farmer's market. I'm in New York City, and they're really pricey here, and I have no car to go out of the city. I get from the farmers where I can, but I'm trying to figure out the least harmful corners to cut. These are my guesses, and any additional insight you can shed would be awesome. I am guessing that heart is probably okay to do conventional, as it's a fairly lean meat. Conventionally raised liver and brain should be avoided, I think, but I've also heard that calf liver should be fine because it hasn't had a chance to accumulate many toxins. Lamb anything is okay because even conventional lamb isn't treated too badly. Bones and feet for broth, I think these are okay to get conventional but shouldn't save the fat after. Poultry anything except heart should not be gotten from conventional sources. What about tongues? Those guys are huge and cheap at my local butcher, and duck tongue is pretty reasonable priced down in Chinatown. What about duck for that matter? I'm not sure. Do they fall into the lamb camp if even conventional are treated okay, or am I fooling myself? For the sake of completeness, I suppose I should include my guesses on kidneys and trotters, but I don't think anything will ever convince me to try these ever, ever, ever. No. Thanks so much, guys. If you've already covered this someplace, sorry for bothering you, but I can't find anything on it via Google except on Paleo Hacks, and that seems to be all guesswork there too.
Okay, so first of all, I just want to clarify that one of her questions was bones or feet for broth. ... And then she says she'll never try trotters. Trotters are pig's feet for broth, and they're awesome. They're so good and gelatinous, and you should definitely put them in your broth.
But is she just talking about just eating them, like cooking them and eating them straight
up? I'm not going to eat pickled trotters. We actually made that recipe for the book and decided, like, there were a few recipes that we made, and it was like, oh, God, no. Pickled trotters were one of them.
I have a recipe coming for trotters in the cookbook that are not pickled and are really, really awesome. And they end up being almost like chicken wings.
Mm. Amy's probably screaming on the other side because she actually enjoyed drinking the... Anyway, we decided that we were not ready to stand
like trotters.
That recipe. So, okay, I'm going to say that, Sarah, you probably have a lot of science.
I do. I have some strong opinions to share.
Kendall probably has.
I got nothing, actually. I got absolutely nothing. I'm like, this woman, I'm like, wow. She's like done a lot of like research here to figure this out. I'm very impressed, you know? And so I'm just going to listen to you guys and sit back. I don't know.
I'm like 100% with her. Like when I was guessing earlier, like that's what I would have done, except duck is not necessarily treated nicely. Like lamb is usually always grass fed no matter what, but duck is not. So that's the one thing that would be my guess.
That's good to know.
Before Sarah like completely tells me that I'm wrong.
I can't wait to hear.
I'm putting my official statement out, and then I'll probably retract it in 20 minutes.
Okay, so where do I want to start? If the only organ meat you can afford is conventional organ meat, then that is great. The benefits that you get from organ meat far, far outweigh the anything that you might be concerned about it being conventional. And especially if you're already eating a mix of conventional muscle meat, like everything that you would be concerned about organ meat, you are just as concerned about in muscle meat, and even more so. So that brings me to this really, really important concept that I want to communicate. And that is that even though the liver and kidney are organs that filter the body, even though the liver is responsible for filtering out toxins, it does not store them. The liver, when it encounters toxins, it has a variety of enzymes that undergo, you know, that convert those toxins into inert substances. Those toxins are then either shuttled to the kidneys, which also don't store them, to be excreted in the urine, or they get combined with bile and are excreted. They're secreted into the small intestine, and then they are pooped out. So the liver does not store toxins. What it does store is all of the building blocks it needs for those chemical reactions to detoxify the toxins. So when you eat liver or when you eat kidney, you're eating the reason why these meats are so nutrient rich. You're eating the minerals and vitamins and antioxidants that those organs store in order to perform their detoxifying functions. And that is true whether it's conventional or grass-fed. Where, you know, grass-fed or pasture-raised is better is in the fat profile of those organs. So, you know, clearly, you know, they'll have more omega-6s if they were raised on conventional feed. But if you're eating some conventional meat, organ meat generally tends to be leaner than most kinds of muscle meats, and that's, you know, clearly, I guess it depends on exactly what muscle you're comparing it to. And even when you look at things like heavy metal toxins and look at studies that compare the deposition of heavy metal toxins from really toxic environments in animals, those toxins actually go more into muscle meat than organs. So, like, by every measure, eating an organ is healthier than eating a muscle. And that's even more true if you're talking about conventionally raised animals. So it's like the most nutrient dense part of the animals. And, you know, other than, you know, if you're eating conventional animals, you do have to worry about your omega-6 and omega-3 balance. You know, basically, you're still eating the best part of the animal, no matter what animal you're talking about. You know, the only issue with brain from conventionally raised animals would be concerns over things like mad cow disease. But my guess is that if you are getting brain from conventionally raised animals, they will actually be butchered by a kosher butcher, because you cannot get brains from animals that are slaughtered in the conventional way because of lead poisoning, because of how those animals are slaughtered. So if you're getting an animal from a kosher butcher, chances are you're getting a healthier animal as well. So I would just, you know, I would ask some questions about brain. You know, we haven't had any cases of, or certainly I haven't seen mad cow disease in the news for quite a long time. There is regular testing. If a farm does show up with, you know, a case, then they end up having to, I think, typically kill all of the animals, and they can't be used for meat on that farm. So I think there's some pretty good mechanisms in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. And brain is like the highest food source of DHA, omega-3 fatty acids. It's almost entirely DHA, the fats in brain. So it's, if you can get, you know, brain that you can be relatively sure does not have mad cow disease, that's a tremendously healthful food. So, definitely with brain, you want to cook it well. But other than that, I mean, I think it's fantastic. And I don't think there's a really strong reason to avoid it unless there's strong suspicions about the farm that it's raised on. Bones and feet are fantastic sources of, collagen and glycine, and make wonderful broth. And yes, heavy metals do deposit in the bones of animals, and that is released into the broth. But the measurements that have been done, still show that the parts per million of heavy metals in the broth is less than what is considered acceptable drinking water. So if you avoided it because you were worried about, the lead that might be in those bones, you're missing out on a really, really amazing food. And if you drink tap water, you're probably getting more lead that way anyways. Tongue is fantastic. It's also a very, very lean meat. Poultry, anything. The thing with poultry is that even pasture-raised poultry has a really high omega-6 content. So the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio of conventional poultry can be as high as like 1 to 40, omega-3 to omega-6. At best, you can, with pasture-raised, like if the only thing those chicken eats are bugs, you can get to about 1 to 7 omega-3 to omega-6. If you feed chicken a diet of almost pure flaxseed, you can get to 1 to 1, but it ends up being not long-chain omega-3s. It ends up being more alpha-linolenic acid, which then is not usable by your body. It's the same thing as like why eating flaxseed or chia seed for the omega-3s is not particularly useful. Our bodies actually can't use ALA. We have to convert it to DHA or EPA, and that conversion is extraordinarily inefficient in our bodies. So I think I kind of – I ranted. I soapboxed. I'm going to stay up there for just one more minute. You have far more, I think, to lose from avoiding organ meat than you do to gain from, trying to be picky about the sources. So I think that if you only have conventional organ meat that you have access to, I think that is still a great thing to eat. Clearly, in all ways, eating pasture-raised meat is better. It's the meat's better quality. It has more nutrient density. The fats are better. From an animal welfare standpoint, it's important. Ecologically, it's better. Environmentally, it's better. Like, clearly. But if you're in the middle of the city and you really don't have access and you can get really, really cheap duck tongues in Chinatown, I would fry up some duck tongues. I think that sounds great.
So can I be the doofus that says that a pint of chicken livers at my local health food grocery store is $3.74? Like, I know that probably the conventional version is $1.50. But I know that a pint of our chicken liver mousse, well, I know that one pint of chicken livers makes a batch of our chicken liver mousse, which lasts me 2 weeks usually. It's a huge batch. And so, yes, you also have to buy butter and cream. But just for an example, like that's a huge amount of chicken liver, like a pint of chicken liver is $3.74. And that's pastured. So,
it's probably 2 pounds. Like that's, yeah,
it's a lot. It's crazy. But so my point is just that I'm not sure where she's looking. Maybe New York City farmers markets aren't the best place. Maybe to check out US Wellness Meats, maybe, shop sales at your local Whole Foods. I know for me, when we were really tight on a budget, we used to shop the, almost sellout date section of the grocery store for meats. And I know that they sell grass-fed meat at regular grocery stores in our general area. And when they get to the close to the sell-by date, they'll put them on sale. Perhaps, shopping that, and then you can freeze it and use it whenever you want. You don't have to use it that day. Like, you can, freeze your meat and save it for later. So, that would be my, as much as I appreciate what you're saying, I also, I just feel like if you're going to go to the trouble of specifically, I think liver, like I think I'm okay with, and maybe bones, like those two things for me, we use so much broth. And really bones, you can just get bone in, cuts of meat and just like cut the bone off yourself, or, you know, if you have a butcher, that'll do it, but that's going to be more expensive, but you just cut the, you know, bone off yourself, and then you've got what's called a meaty soup bone, and you can just make your own stuff. If you buy bone in cuts of meat, they're usually less expensive anyway. Save the bone, cook it. I don't know. I think for me, if I was going to look at any area where I was going to try to get grass-fed, it would be kind of what she said originally. Conventionally raised liver and brain should be avoided. I would agree with that. And I would check out chicken liver. It's pretty cheap, man.
And I'm wondering about the bone situation from her local farmer's market. I know she's in the city, but I mean, like, I can get like a giant bag of bones for like $3.
Yeah.
So I don't. And then also the other thing I'm wondering is my husband went and processed. He goes to a friend of ours farm and processes chicken with them. And comes home with bags and bags of free livers and free feet. So just for going in, you know, because like partially they don't sell the feet because they're like, there's just really hard to get super clean. And so we just kind of get rid of them. And so he's like, oh my gosh, I will take all of these feet home. And
all
they
the
hooked all the feet. I will take all the feet. And that was a lot of broth and the livers. And so, you know, part of me is thinking like, if you're on a budget and you're trying to figure out how can I have some stuff that's maybe not conventional, but I don't want to pay for it. I mean, trade out some time on a farm, you know? Now I get this person saying like for them specifically, they don't have a car, so they can't leave the city. And I totally understand and respect that. But I'm just saying for other people who might be listening and trying to come up with options that would be reasonable for them, you know, go out and do some timeshare on a local farm and, you know, see what they'll trade you.
And Sarah, you developed like a relationship with your butcher last year where if you went on a certain day at a certain time, he'd like under the table give you his leftover grass-fed bones, right?
It was grass-fed fat trimmings.
Ah.
So, and it was like my local Whole Foods butcher, and he was giving me like bags of fat trimmings that I was rendering into tallow for free.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, now I'm getting fat from a different source, but it just, yeah. I mean, awesome. So, and that was, you know, I'm sure there's Whole Foods in New York. There's got to be, right? So, and I know that, you know, for us, one of the incentives for eating as much organ meat as we do is that it's the cheapest meat. I mean, I just bought a bunch of, you know, grass-fed beef kidney from U.S. Wellness Meats. And, you know, with the coupon, I think it worked out to $3.87 a pound, which, you know, for me lasts, because kidney's so rich, it lasts me 4 meals. And, you know, I just find that as an entry into grass-fed meat, it's really inexpensive. My mom is buying a lot of, she's basically switched to completely pasture-raised and grass-fed meat from a local farm. And the way she affords it is that probably 80% of what she's buying is organ meat. And because organ meat still, because people still feel uncomfortable with organ meat, people don't know how to prepare it. You know, a lot of people, you know, remember the, you know, leathery liver and onions that their mom forced them to eat once a week when they were kids and think that that's how all liver tastes. So they don't, they just assume that they don't like it. You know, I think because of that, there's a sort of a supply and demand thing where it really works out in our favor. And my mom is getting, you know, organ meat for ridiculously cheap. And I had a farmer last year who sadly isn't producing meat for sale anymore, but they couldn't sell their organ meat. And they would give me any of, I mean, offal cut, not just organs, but cheeks and jowls and all kinds of great stuff like that for $2 a pound.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Oh. I was getting jowls for $2 a pound. And I miss it because I think jowl is like my favorite thing off a pig. So part of it is, you know, like organ meat is cheaper because people, people still don't want it. And we still, as a country, ship most of our organ meat to other countries.
To summarize, just like I said, I would retract. I'm gonna say, for me personally, I would really focus on getting liver into your diet and getting pasture liver into your diet, because I don't think that the price difference is going to be that great. And I think a little bit of liver goes a long way. And I would really focus on buying pastured. If you can't get it from Whole Foods or a local health food store, then I would get it during the U.S. Wellness Meats when they have their 15% off coupons, which they do every 2 weeks. And you can sign up for their newsletter, or you can follow Sarah and I on our Facebook pages, because we always share when they do the coupons. And I would say personally that heart and tongue and jowl and things that are more meaty in nature, like you said, not really that big of a concern. However, I would say consider those like meat. You can make like hamburger meat and jerky and meals. I know a lot of people like to skewer and just grill quickly heart meat. So if you compare like a pastured heart to, a cut of meat that you would comparably do that with, like cube meat or something, it would be a huge difference in price per pound. But if you can't afford it, no judgment, go for it. Chicken, I just wouldn't eat chicken. If you're on a budget, I don't know what you ladies think, but when I was on a budget, we didn't eat a lot of chicken, because chicken tends to be the most expensive.
I don't even know that we're like necessarily even on like a super strict food budget, and we don't eat chicken. You know, because it's like occasionally we have one farmer that we get wings and drumsticks from, and that's it. Like, because those are pretty reasonable, you know, but it's really, really expensive, unless it's going to come out of my backyard, which, you know, at some point that will happen. But then I will be eating some chicken. But
And try to find bones that you can get pastured. Like, you're afraid of trotters, but honestly, trotters and chicken feet are super, super good for making broth, and even pastured are going to be cheap. Like, they're just really cheap. So go for it. Broth and liver are going to be the best things to helping you heal. So if you can get the most nutrient dense versions of those in pastured, go for it. Everything else, get it where you can and just be proud that you're eating heart and tongue. Frankly, I really like tongue, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I said it was going to be a short show, and it never is.
That was only two questions.
You did have me on, and no, I run my mouth. So.
It's not you.
It's you guys, too. It's good to know I'm not the only one.
Sarah had a couple of soapboxes. I talked too long about all my personal stuff and marketing and blah, blah, blah. You know. If you're still with us, people, thank you for not.
Thank you for the six people who are still listening.
We'll get some good nuggets for you at the end. No, we won't, because we we taped the whole show. So good luck, Matt. Pulling that one together.
Wait, let's think of some bloopers now, real fast.
Farting noise.
That'll work.
Yeah. I can't fart. I ate good today. There's a little nugget. Well, Kendall, thank you so much for being on.
I had such an awesome time. Thank you so much for having me. This is great hanging out with you lovely ladies.
I'm excited for what you're bringing to the world, and I hope that you have an opportunity to share your platform with more people, because I think the job that you have with the school system is so cool, and I hope that more school systems adopt that into their curriculum. And
I hope so too.
You know, I think that it's so cool what you're doing, and I love that you're taking it on at home with the urban farming. Can I ask you a personal question just to elongate the show a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. I love that.
Okay, so the hesitation that I have when I heard your show about urban farming and all the stuff that you're doing is that our county and often HOAs have limitations on what you cannot do in your yard. And so although we could definitely garden, and we could have a, you know, front lawn garden of epic proportions if we decided that that's what we wanted to do, although we have a big tree and I don't really want to cut it down. But anyway.
Yeah. We have some of that. We were dealing with some of that as well.
Yeah. So so the gardening part, absolutely. No restrictions. You know, I dare someone to come over and tell me I can't grow a pumpkin. But there are very explicit laws in our county, and we're fortunate that we don't have an HOA, but most people that live around me have very, very strict HOAs. And I'm pretty sure that even like the fish pond that you have going on, which by the way, first time I ever heard that, what do you call it? You called it something.
Aquaponics. But it's in my basement.
Okay.
I mean, it could be, it's in the process.
We definitely can't do any farm animal at all. Like, because we honestly
Well, it's tilapia. It's tilapia, and you could do it in a greenhouse, and nobody would ever know. And that's the whole, like, we're essentially going to have a hoop house and move it out into that. We don't have an HOA either, but we're right in the middle of the city, and we do have city limits. And most of the people we know don't have permitted chickens, you know. And it's just, it's really just basically making sure your neighbors are happy and okay with it all. And we live in a pretty hip little area where a lot of people have bees and chickens. And I mean, like, it's so funny. I went into my girls'
join your paleo commune.
Dude, I'm seriously, like, one of my dreams is to have an intentional urban community. Like, just, you know, take sort of like a 2 mile radius of like the neighborhood I live in and sort of the surrounding neighborhoods, and like we all just kind of come together and everybody grows what they grow, and then we like trade out, sort of have our own little farmer's market in our area and have like potlucks where we like do cow shares.
Awesome.
And all the stuff that like we can't get because we like live in the city, we can't grow ourselves, but we go. That's my dream. That's really what I like want to build in my area, but I'm doing a lot of other stuff, so I'm gonna just put that on the back burner for now. But yeah, I mean, I think that, again, like, just sort of being like, yeah, okay, that's the law, but, you know, hey, like, how serious are they going to really, are they going to come out and check if, you know, whatever. I mean, I think we just sort of decided to deal with that if it comes. And we've just been really, really fortunate that, like, our chickens have not caused any issues. And we have neighbors who want to buy eggs from us all the time. And, you know, And I know people who have HOAs who are like totally doing sneaky chickens. I think it's awesome. I love it.
I'm such a non-rule breaker that way. I'd be like, oh my gosh, what if I get caught? What if they take my chickens? What's going to happen? Are they going to kick me out?
I guess my whole thing, I'm like, if something happened and it got down to that and we had tried to fight it, and I would just be like, well, we're just going to have a lot of chicken to eat for the next few weeks, you know? That's sort of, I know. And I know a lot of people be like, oh my God, that's so cruel. They're not my pets. They're livestock. I look at my chickens the same way that any farmer looks at their chickens. It's the same thing for me. They are not our pets, and our children know that. They are food sources for us, and we treat them well. We take great care of them. We want them to have happy lives, but still, you know, that's sort of how I deal with that, you know, if that sort of impending doom were to happen. Yeah. But I think it's the new age, you know? I mean, like, everybody's really, like, you know, realizing that this is sort of what we have to do. And I don't want to keep like rambling on, but Josh Whiten is just like amazing. And he presented at AHS, and he was also on a panel he presented at PFX and then was on a panel at AHS. And I got the chance to interview him and talk to him again. And he's just like 3 hours away from where I live. And he's running an urban city farm in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he's all into like just this amazing sustainability stuff. And he was talking about the fact that like chickens and eggs are unbelievable. Like, the amount of, you know, fat and protein in this great little egg, and how we can really like just be sustained off of that. Those of us who don't have autoimmune issues who can eat those. Okay. You know, and I just think there's a lot that we can do with urban farming that we could look at in a survival kind of way and know that, you know, if something happened and we couldn't get food from other sources or whatever, like just having these options in our own yard or our communities, and we all team up together, like, that's huge. So I love the you know, like, grow food, not grass. I just,
yeah,
totally. I'm a huge supporter of that. So
one day I too have a vision of that. Did I tell this story already? Sarah, correct me if I've told this story already, but there was a huge piece of property. I think they said it was like 41 or 114, whatever. It was.
I've heard this story, but I'm not sure you've told it on the podcast.
There was a ginormous piece of property, like, in the vicinity of reasonableness in my current county, right? Like, I didn't have to move out to farmland because it has been zoned for a very long time as a horse farm. And so it has farming zoning, and it's like on a convenient area that I could still have a job and like go to work and not have to commute an hour. And I had this like half serious, definitely not serious powwow with a few of my friends, like, hey, we could buy this property and I'll build houses on it and like have this little homestead together, and each of us could have a job to like run the homestead. And the problem was that everybody wanted to do this, the easy stuff, like, you know, everybody wanted to cook and everybody wanted to homeschool the kids and nobody wanted to actually work the farm. So, the little joke did not turn into reality, but I mean, I think there's definitely that part of me that's like, I would love to live on a street where there's a bunch of paleo people and we all kind of, you know, are able to lean on each other for resources. When I run out of almond flour, there's no hope for me. Like, there, you know what I mean? Right. Like, there's nobody I can go knock on the door next door and be like, I'm baking cookies for a potluck at work tomorrow. Can I have almond flour? No.
Or not just even paleo people, but like the reality is like people who just understand the idea of food or real food. You know, I work with so many local food folks, and that to me is just as important, whether they believe that eating, you know, quinoa works for them or whatever. You know, I think like just in our neighborhood alone, there's a guy down the street that we trade honey and eggs for. You know, we give him eggs, and I mean, I barter my hair now for eggs. Like, I use eggs for everything. You know, I'm like, can I just buy that with eggs, please? And you know, and it's just, I think just being around people who understand and appreciate the idea of real food is like, oh, it's just so awesome. So yeah.
Awesome indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if somebody else wants to buy that property, it's still for sale. And we would be happy to sign up for food duty. Just saying.
They'll do the easy jobs of cooking and homeschooling the kids.
Matt will cook and do the dishes. And I will go to work every day to make sure that I can pay a mortgage. So that's what we can contribute.
I don't want to homeschool or cook. I will totally go do the work.
Okay.
Those are two things I definitely don't want to be part of. So I'm coming to your homestead.
I really like digging in the dirt, I have to admit.
See, we just got to get enough of us together and make everybody else move to my state so that,
right,
I don't have,
yeah,
to
move there. Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Well, Kendall, like I said, it was awesome having you on.
Thank you so much, you guys. I feel so honored. I really do. Thank you for asking me.
Check you out at primal-balance.com. And what's you have a podcast too, which people should check out. You mentioned earlier, but where should they go to download that?
It's Born Primal. You can get it on iTunes. It's on my blog and on iTunes. Born Primal, Conversations with the Ancestral Health Community.
Cool. Well, we will see you around and talk to you later and be inspired and in awe of all the things that you do.
Oh, thank you guys. Have a great one.
You too.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
And scene.
What?